This is Robin Ayu from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode recording. As you can see, I still have my wall. That's an actual wall behind my house here, behind my office. And I'm still in Christmas mode here. We're doing all the podcast recording in a Christmas season. And I know it will date the episode for the future, but, you know, I love the red color, so no worries. Today, I have the distinct honor and pleasure to be recording episode 147 with Harish. Harish, I'm not going to be able to pronounce your last name, to be honest with you. And if I do pronounce it, I'm going to make a mess out of it. So, Harish, would you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah. I'm Harish Chandramouli. I'm the head of AI at Good Day Software. Primarily, we have been working on like ERPs, fashion industry, or like e-com industries. And happy to answer any other questions that you
Absolutely.
Come up with.
Before we get deep into the conversation here, everybody comes on this channel. The first question is, what is your story? So we'd like to get to know you on a personal level. As much as you can share, you don't have to get too personal, but whatever you can share with us, your journey, your business journey, how did you start and how did you get to where you are?
So I grew up in India in this town called Gopchidipali. I never thought I would be having a company or I would be like heading different departments in US. After my undergrad, came to US for my master's in cybersecurity. And at Johns Hopkins, one of the things I noticed is like a lot of my friends went on to go and start some of the best companies out there. And at the time, unfortunately, I couldn't do that because I needed the financial stability. I had like the education loan and everything mattered. So I joined Bloomberg. I did security, but I always wanted to be a builder and developer. So I did not want to go into like security consultancy role. So at Bloomberg, I was able to join the security engineering team where we were building authentication and like data center security before the whole like security engineering became very famous like 10 years back. But luckily that allowed me to join MongoDB. I was the first like official cloud security engineer they hired. And that was a good journey. I saw the company grow, the team grow. Obviously you grow with them, but it's also like very interesting to learn how to think about product, tech, building and prioritization that you are forced to do, right? ROI is not just, oh, this is a great product that people will use. It is little more like how much time it will take me, how much I would get in return versus some other thing that might take a shorter time, might not be the fanciest thing, but the ROI might be much better. So that has been the journey at Mongo, but at some point Mongo maybe became too big. And I feel like I was not closer to customers. One of the things is like when you join, you do everything. But then as the company becomes larger and larger, you get to do only the small portion of things. And I feel like I like being hands-on in everything. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like what led to me thinking about what I should do next. And I went to a store called ONS in New York City, saw how an e-com brand operates. And one of the things that stood out to me is like e-com back office in general is a workflow and data problem. Mm-hmm. And it has been very outdated. Oracle is the biggest player in e-com ERP. And naturally, coming from MongoDB, that also made me curious. It's like, why a database company, a tech database company, puts so much effort in ERPs? And that made me do research, and that's how Flare started. At Flare, we wanted to build the most flexible ERP out there. The way I thought about things were like, in database, coming from a tech background, everything is numbers and text. That's your baseline. Whereas in e-com industry, cup size, color, UPC codes becomes like a primitive data type. So what if I extend the database knowledge to create these e-com specific data types on top of it and build a very flexible ERP platform out there? It was a great 3-year journey. Obviously, we did not have the numbers where it needs to be in terms of sales with the growth expectation and stuff. And that's when I met Kyle. I knew Kyle as the Loop and Chubbies guys, because they had a brand called Chubbies, and Loop Returns is like the biggest returns platform in US, and they started an ERP. So at the time when I spoke to him, I realized we both see the world in the same way. We both see the ERP space evolving in the same way. So that's what led me to shut down Flare and join Good Day Software.
And are you still involved with Zero Shop?
Yes, it's something I just started during the transition period, and that's when I met Kyle and Tracy. Did like, we both have similar vision. So Zero Shop is little more in the same space. But the concentration has been like with the AI and ERPs, if companies like Good Day Software can build the core ERP, Zero Shop can build every other attestation layer around the ERP. One, Shopify can do 95% of the things a merchant needs these days. So just being able to tune Shopify and then use these ERPs to connect to them would allow you to not have a bulky NetSuite implementations. Rather, you could run away with a point solution ERPs that just works well.
Okay. And now that you are starting about a month ago, it looks here, Good Day Software. Tell us a little bit more about Good Day, if you don't mind, Harish.
Yeah. So Good Day Software is also an e-com ERP. We want to be the most native e-com platform. Since it has been started by two people who have been in like, who have run a brand, who have been in e-com industry for a long time, they bring in a lot of ideas that would have taken me so much time to do the research with if I do it on my own. For me, the example was pre-sale. I did build the ERP, but I never thought pre-selling as a pain. And when I came to Good Day, when I saw how well they have built pre-selling a product, what pre-selling basically means is like during these rush Christmas season, sometimes you make an order with the factory. You know the order is going to reach your factory in like 2 weeks, but you don't want to sell during the Thanksgiving period. You don't want to wait for the inventory to hit the factory. And Good Day built those kind of niche features on top of just being a standard functionality of the ERP. And that's the main thing. Experience they bring in as an operators who have built a brand has been immense, and you can see that impact in Good Day Software.
And you still believe that there is a market for this?
Yes, that's why I am in this industry. I did not want to get away from it because NetSuite has been dominating, but people do not like NetSuite. Like even at Flare, when I onboarded one of our customers, she literally cried saying that this is so easy to use. So the market is that. Obviously, I feel like I did not have the distribution channel, but when it comes to Good Day Software, both the things now matches.
Okay, so there's better distribution channels now for you?
Yes. Kyle and they come from the industry, so they know the industry. They know the people in the industry.
And do you think the customers are willing to pay for this service? Is there a need out there?
Yes. I mean, no one questions an ERP is needed because every company spends a lot of money on the ERP. A lot more than they should. That's how it ends up being, right? People start with NetSuite implementation thinking that it's going to cost them 50K, 60K. And then they realize on the way that it ended up costing them 300,000, 400,000 just for implementation. So the money already exists. We are not trying to come in with a new budget. It's a matter of like, we can do that more efficiently, more nimble, especially in the world of AI, it gives you an equal footing. An example for me is like recon, right? Every day you try to compare your Shopify's like e-com platform's inventory count and what is in the warehouse and be able to see why the differences are exist. And it is like hundreds of rows. Maybe AI could do a step further and say, is there any pattern it is seeing? Because if it sees a pattern, then that helps the user to do this recon so easily than spending hours checking the numbers.
Absolutely. For those audience who are listening to us and they don't not familiar with the entire conversation about how something like head of artificial intelligence at Good Day Software will do, or what does the software do in specifics. I mean, I know it's an ERP for e-commerce, but can you explain it a little bit more in details, I guess, just to give an appreciation to what the software does? And what is your role, like head of artificial intelligence? I mean, that's pretty unique.
I think roles doesn't matter in startups. It's like a 5-people engineering team.
You do just
have fun,
right?
Building. Yeah. That's exactly why I wanted to be in startups, right? So yeah. I wouldn't so over-index on the role. It just says that in the team, my responsibility is just like concentrate more on AI parts so that we don't end up always picking up non-AI related task and just like kicking it down the road. That's it. In terms of prioritization, it gives me a little more leeway into saying like, hey, I want to do this part of the work. But in general, for Good Day, if you are a Shopify brand, Shopify is the biggest e-com platform in US at the very least, and they are, I guess, in the world as well. If you are in Shopify, if you are running your business out of Shopify. There will come a time where you will outgrow Shopify for managing your back office operation. What does this mean? In typical life cycle of an e-com brand, you write a purchase order. The purchase order goes to your factory and the factory ships things, comes to your warehouse and you sell. The process might look simple, but there are so much complexities involved behind the scenes. Sometimes it takes 6 months. Sometimes it takes a year for purchase order to plan and come. And you, your planners, you themselves also need to think about how to plan. And even within e-com, things gets more and more complex. For example, in fashion, it's seasonal. You need to plan when things are coming in and you get only like 4 to 6, 8 weeks to sell. Sorry, 8 to 12 weeks to sell a season. But at the end of the season, you also need to liquidate those values and then you need to be able to reorder the next one because it's a heavy cash flow, heavy business. So what does that mean? That you need to have data that is very clear that says how much you have on hand, how much inventories you are planning to get incoming, what is your sales throughput to calculate, like do you need to do reorders? So we as a platform gives you that robust stability and the data for you to operate your business every day. If you take any e-com business, the life cycle works is like you start with Shopify. You probably will be like working with just one or two factories. Everything works. But once you want to scale, then you hire people, more people come in. Then you need to start writing more purchase orders. Then you need to like think about splitting the purchase orders. Air shipping might be expensive, but you can start selling sooner. Shipping is cheaper, but you need to wait for it before you start selling it. So you might do split shipments. More and more complexity starts the bigger you become.
My mic was muted. For those audience who have had this problem before, you know what I'm talking about. You leave your mic on mute and you talk, and then Harish will look at me saying, what the heck this guy's saying? It's all in good faith. I just wanted to say, from your perspective, you're looking at these this situation with ERP, e-commerce, etc. What do you think I know you've mentioned something about you've witnessed something at a store. You went to see it, how it functions, and that triggered you down. Is that the inflection point, you think, that shaped how you think about scaling some e-commerce? Or is there other areas that you think also pushed you in that direction?
So that was the inflection point for me, but I also obviously did my research and like went and saw like hundreds of stores, how they operate, what they do. Everyone has similar problems. The simplest example for me was that when most of the stores' purchase order gets received in email from the factory to the purchase order manager. Purchase order manager, and when they negotiate, it's like hundreds of email. But in the era of AI and everything, you shouldn't have to comb through all your email, figure out what changes came in, take the purchase order and manually go and re-enter those data inside an ERP. You get an email, you get a purchase order in email, you immediately need to see that in your system. Because those workflow automations saves time. It's more feasible in the era of AI, kind of helps you. That's like the first starting point, right? Why are software not even doing those basics? Other simple thing I saw is like some of the ERPs, you can't even like search shirt as like some type of shirt. There is no search button available. And people used to remember the SKU numbers, which is some technical number, and enter and search. I'm like, as a human, if I open a software, if I can't search, like that's not 2025. Sometimes we always think big, right? When I'm working with these people, the smallest features were so missing, I wanted to build copy paste. People still plan a lot out of spreadsheet and then try to do some random like things or CSV upload corrections, template change, everything. I'm like, no, if you have a CSV there, if you just want few fields, allow copy paste between an Excel sheet and your ERP, because you see people are in Excel sheet all the time, right?
Yeah.
I think being a startup allows you to do these observation more easily and have vision towards building those smaller things.
And that's what pushed you basically to say, okay, I'm going to do this a little differently. I'm going to build it a little differently. And obviously, you know, you've done things with Flare, and now you're with Good Day, which is pretty much repackaged company, based on what I heard from you.
It's so, not repackaged. It's kind of like they take a different approach, like I said.
Are they? Okay.
The core is the same, But coming from operational background, they understand a little more depth around inventory movements and stuff, which I did not have. But yes, at the end of the day, we are an ERP, the same target audience. We used to sell against each other. So the target audience ends up being the same.
Yeah, yeah. So as you reflect on this, like from your perspective, Harish, what was the skills that you think you had that turned out to be more valuable than you expected, right? So you would, every one of us has some of those. So which one really struck you that I've had this skill, but it, somewhere I found that it's more valuable than I initially thought it was?
Working for 100 hours straight for 3 years. See what else?
Yeah, that would be a skill.
So for me, I see everything as a puzzle and pieces. When I do a lot of research, I was able to find pieces that are really important. These kind of like the things I highlight, right? When I was going for the sales process, one person literally cried saying that it's a 21st century software because we allowed copy paste. Often, I feel when you are not close to customers and if you are not building it by talking to customers directly, even though we are software engineers and we are not comfortable being in front of customers, it is very important. And getting out of my comfort zone was probably the biggest thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether it's a skill, but something I started doing. And yeah, that was
absolutely
helpful.
You're absolutely correct. Like, I mean, personal story on my side. I mean, I was an engineer working for a telecom company, and that's all I did, designing networks, etc. And then one day, the sales manager is sick, and I'm supposed to be now the sales manager, according to the CEO of the company. He says, "Today you are the sales manager." I said, "I don't do that. I'm not a sales guy. I design things, and the sales goes out and sell it." A similar scenario, right? So I didn't know really I had that skill in me, to be honest with you. And, you know, that was like 35 years ago, and I'm done with that now. I still do some tech stuff, but I'm more of a business development engineer more than anything else, I guess, than the rest of the stuff. So
I'm happy to be concentrating more on tech now. I'm back at Good Day. At some point, I had to take over sales as well at Flair. But I think that gave me a lot more learning because you are talking to 10 plus brands selling things. I know there were a lot of like ways you can sell and stuff. For me, my own personality, being honest, is the easiest way I could be comfortable. So I will go on these sales calls and be upfront like, "Hey, I am an engineer. I have patterns. I built like core things at MongoDB. Never like had to speak to customers, be in a room and build. But now I'm talking to you. So forgive me if I make any mistakes. Forgive me if I ask you a dumb question. But part of this is like, I love, at the end of the day, I love solutions. I love solving problems. So I just want to learn your problem and see what I can do as an engineer to make your life better." And I'm being pretty strong. People like that I was honest.
And what I notice about customers too is when they're talking to the person that actually builds something, and I love your profile on LinkedIn, "What do you do?" It's builder. That's my title. I build stuff. That's good. Then there is no filter. There is nobody who's interpreting what the customer said to the engineer. It's like your direct connection to the person who's actually going to do the work.
Yes. And even during the sales cycle, if you think about it, a salesperson might say, "Hey, we don't have that function." But in my mind, as someone who knew the every line of code written there,
yeah,
I can just create that in 10 lines of code change. So I would just say that, "Hey, we have it." It's so easy to improvise doing sales call because you just know the product really well.
Absolutely. Just on that, what do you feel like it's overhyped right now more than you feel underappreciated?
I mean, obviously, I feel like AI is overhyped. AI has its place. I think AI makes us more efficient. That is also overhype around AI being like a magic. I would say that like it's with AI specifically, a lot of times I see people just coming and saying that, "Hey, this is an agentic product that will solve every issue you have." No, but also knowing your customers, knowing the depth of knowledge, especially about the industry and building this agent would definitely make you more efficient.
Absolutely.
Might not, like the inventory example I gave, where you have differences, AI might not resolve every difference, but AI probably will definitely surface it with much more information that you can make your process easy.
Absolutely.
At least that's how I feel about it.
No, I mean, I've talked to many people on this channel and everybody seems to feel the same. You're not, with all due respect, you're not the only one who says AI is overhyped. Pretty much everybody agrees to that statement. It depends on if you are like Sam Altman or something, you probably don't think that. But for us who are consumer of AI technology, we think a little bit of this thing being overhyped a little bit. It's got its usability. I know that. And you know that. But we have to be smart on where to use it and how to use it.
Yes. And that's what joining Good Day also kind of like made me excited about is like when I build these agents, I can just turn to two operators and be like, how exactly I can add value.
Now, if you were to say, well, look, these are some structural shifts that they are going to define the next 3 to 5 years, what would those be? Do you know?
The way we operate in the world of AI needs to change as well. Tom is one thing, even as a coder, what I do these days is like before I go to meeting, I give it a bunch of instruction on what to build. It builds, and then I come back and just review it. So I spend half an hour explaining AI what I want to build, come back and review it. It's making me really efficient. The similar thing would apply for every industry that like think of it as a way for you to like be able to give instruction, forget about it, then come back and take actions on the results. That is a very material shift I am seeing in the way I am working.
And how do you feel about the evolution of this technology? Because my understanding, and you're more experienced on this than I am, is the technology is evolving on a daily basis. There are more advancements happening on a day-to-day basis at a very rapid pace. Like before, I mean, 10 years ago, people would download Windows 11 and then they wait for Windows 12 to come out and then we download that. We don't have that function now. We don't have that feature in AI. AI is here and it continuously evolves. And if you're a subscriber to it, then you reap those benefits. And it's evolving very rapidly. So we talk about AGI. I don't know what stage are we in AGI right now, but I'm assuming we're advancing. And people keep talking about ASI as the, you know, the holy grail, if you will, the destination of AI evolution. Any addition, any comments on that?
I am usually the type who gets excited because it's evolving every day. That means I need to adopt every day. I kind of want to just go with the flow. That's how I think about it, right? Because even a Good Day or Flare, whatever I built today, would be very outdated a year from now. Previously, when you build something, you can plan for that to exist for 4 years, 5 years. These days, it's like you build something, you need to rebuild that because AI has changed so much in like 3 months, 4 months. The most important part is being open-minded, being able to adopt as quickly as possible is important, both from personal level for me, what AI means, as well as like as a head of AI, as I think through, as I plan different AI features. I'm humble enough to admit that I might have built this whole workflow. Example for me is workflow automation, right? Inetons and Zappies of the world existed and they had like a lot of these agentic workflow builders. ChatGPT came and just released one 6 months back. These type of things are going to happen and you need to adopt yourself as quickly as possible.
So how do you build platforms around these constant changes? I mean, platforms are, as you mentioned earlier, like new feature comes out, you have to go correct your platform, rebuild it, correct the feature. Many industries out there, not just your industry, but many industries, they look for that at least some static environment after you've built something for a few months, a year, etc., because they want to get their benefit out of the investment they did. Now, what we're saying is either we have to change the way we develop applications, we develop platforms and systems, to more of an agile way of developing it, meaning it can constantly evolve and develops with the new technologies. Because at some point, somebody's going to say, well, listen, I just paid $1 million developing a platform. You're telling me I have to pay again in 6 months from now to develop the same platform because we have a new feature? It just stops making economical sense. You know where I'm going?
Yes. Obviously, it's one of the topics I have been having as we prioritize for 2026, right? The way I think about this is like, let's pick up the pieces which is very specific to us and concentrate on it rather than building like this one big agent or like thinking of AI as this one big piece. We will build things that's very specific to e-com industry. We will build things that we know is a pain for e-com industry and automate with AI. If something changes, we will go back and fix it. But the probability of some other, the probability of that changing by drastically in a year is less. And then when we, the technologies that are changing are more like orchestration, workflow, how different nodes talk to each other, how multiple people can bring different agents together and make the workflow even more robust for our users. That level is changing a lot. It is going to change over the next year. MCP now is a standard. That means you don't have to build everything. You just need to expose your agent and some other agent can pick you up. And email was an example, right? Flare, I built this entire crazy email sync, email parser, everything. But for good day, that's not needed because now we can have an email agent that someone has and just piggyback on it to say, give me the attachments. That's it. So I think the part that's going to change a lot, at least what I see in the next year or so, would be more around these orchestration, MCP, A2A agent. And I'm being open-minded that these might change. But as these changes, I am betting on how I can take advantage of them. Zero Shop was an example for me that at the beginning, the way I started is that I was betting on Shopify coming up with Sidekick and Sidekick agent extension. How can I make the dev experience better? And they did come up with it. So I think to a certain extent, you need to look forward and bet on something.
Absolutely. And speaking of that, the thing I see right now is a lot of rush to adopt AI by many companies. We were talking about it earlier on an earlier podcast recording. And people are not, because they're rushing so fast to deploy that technology, deploy AI technology, a lot of times what happened is they break something because they did not really fully thought it out and they fully, you know, imagined where this is going to go and how is it going to go. So in your opinion, when companies are trying to scale up to AI-driven workflow, what generally breaks down first?
Something I have been thinking just even today morning. Sometimes with all these AI, we forget the basics. When you release MCPs, when you have people integration, observability becomes so important. So the first thing is like, with all the crazy technologies, let's remember that logging becomes more important. Your code needs to have logs. Your code needs to have tracing. So that when something goes wrong, you can immediately figure out what is going wrong. Especially think of it like with MCP, we are talking 100 different tools, data moving through 100 different ways, and you don't even predict how it is going. So you need to know how things are happening. And I feel like taking care of those basics is such an important part, piece of things. Other things is like, things are bound to break. For me, it's a risk profile of like, hey, do I know what change I am making? If I break, can I revert it? My risk profile at Mongo is very different because especially as we became a bigger company, I can't bring anything down. My current risk profile is more like if it's a Sunday, I'm doing a release. People are not using the platform. If it breaks for 5 minutes and I can revert immediately, that's a call everyone has to make. The other part is like, yes, people are moving fast for AI, but also think of where we need to build or what we need to build, right? A lot of people built like, hey, you can ask questions from my database, I will answer as a big feature last year. And now I wouldn't pick it up because there are a lot of toolings out there which you can just hook up to your database and be like, hey, if customer asks certain type of questions, look at the database and answer. So I am scaling fast. I am adding value to users. I'm just not building it myself. Looking for those tools, especially as a startup, as a mid-sized company, goes a long way in having that stability because those tools themselves just do that one thing really well, and hopefully they have that stable platform out there. So at least that's how I think about building, especially as a startup, that I want to add all these AI values to users, and I don't want to break. I also don't have a big engineering team to do each and every piece really well. So how I can think about it is like, find the pieces that others do really well, and you can just utilize them, and find the pieces that you need to build.
Yeah, 100%. Now, you mentioned it earlier, one of the drivers, which I'm seeing as well, it's just big demand for orchestration and access to content, right? So how do you bring all this together? For the past 30, 40 years of technology as a humanity, we took a great effort in building walls around content repositories, whatever the content is. You mentioned Oracle earlier. We put a lot of walls around that. And now what we're asking is, can I have access to that? And so how do you manage all this? Like, there's thousands upon thousands of content repositories out there, and none of them talk to each other. And now we're saying, okay, we're going to orchestrate all this data together. My background is data, by the way. But how do you get that? I mean, there must be like hundreds of thousands of APIs out there.
That's why I feel things like MCP and A2A becomes more important, because you keep your data, but you just do certain actions on your data and give the reply back to other people so that they can continue with whatever things they do, right? Even in the ERP space, one of the biggest, hardest thing why ERP existed is because you have, every company uses 30, 40 different tools to operate on day-to-day basis in e-com industry. And ERP became the heart of the process, where you will do specific integration with each of the toolings people use, bring the data together in the ERP and make the data more useful. And there is no standards among integration, right? For if I have 10 companies using 10 different warehouses, then I am doing like 10 different integrations, creating those codes. Imagine everyone has an MCP now. Now AI allows you to do those integration, write those integrations very easily. The way I think about it is like, a lot of systems were connecting data, accessing data, even pre-AI era. The AI era is just bringing the standard for it being able to do that faster. I do get where you are going in terms of sharing data becomes a thing versus gatewalling it. I don't have a great answer to it, because I always think like even when I am building, if my competitor wants to see my software, I would usually type to show it. If you can see my software, go and build a better one. Do it. My customer deserves a better software. So I am someone always being like very open to sharing things.
I don't
have an answer to it. Yeah.
One of the things that normally happen when you're sharing information, regardless of the platform, et cetera, is a couple of very high level stuff is people are normally worried about trust. You know, do I trust the access and the quality and the accountability, right? So are you accountable to specifically like, and I mean, you're working in retails and e-commerce, so it shouldn't be a problem. But if you move to other industries like investment, banking, insurance, medical, when you get into those, then you're starting to see the level of scrutiny around data access is higher.
That is true. That's one of the reasons I guess I stuck with e-com. But even in e-com, for example, the PLM, which is like the design information that the company stores, like a t-shirt could have different materials composed in different ways. You do want to make sure that data stays within us, because that's proprietary customers' information. They have put in a lot of effort into coming up with those designs. And that's where they look up to people like us who come from tech background, who are providing this tech platform to make those decisions, be careful that when I say I will expose my every data to AI, I don't end up picking the wrong data where people want to keep it private. People want those information to be within them. What needs to be gatefold, what can be exposed is going to, it's a decision. I come from a security background and I feel that like this is going to be a new security challenge that needs to come up. And as things evolve, security regulations on PII, data security needs to evolve. I'm just interested in seeing how everything is evolving. That's it. An example, like you said, right, banking industry and stuff. You can't even use that AI agentic coding platform 2 years back when it came up. Now everyone is like, okay, we need to be efficient. Why not we deploy those coding agents within our infrastructure and let our engineers use it? So there is going to be evolution around how to do these things in a gatewalled environment. People are adopting, people are evolving. Again, it's an interesting time. Let's see where the standard comes into play, right? The funny thing for me is like, I feel like industry is evolving, everyone is evolving. I still don't know whether these HIPAA and SOC compliances really have adopted to the changes in AI.
Normally, technology evolves and policy will follow later, and there's always a gap between the two. One of the things is I want to ask is, as we move along here with our conversation, Harish, which thank you again for your time with me. What advice would you find yourself repeating most of the time right now, most often? Is there something that you're continuously repeating to people? What would that be?
For me, one, lean on mentors and everyone around me, because that went a long way in running a company, because every day was a different challenge. And without people around me helping me, I wouldn't be here, and I am someone who never asked for help actively before, and that was a pain. People are there to help you do that. I think that's one. Second thing is being confident about my own ability. It doesn't come naturally to me, and I had to learn that the hard way. Those probably are the two things that on top of my mind.
Very important. I mean, you know, these are very important aspects of leadership, and especially now in the advanced tech that you're in. And these are things constantly evolving. We can't all be knowing everything at the same time. You know, knowledge is at a various levels. You know, one engineer find out something, the other engineer doesn't know about it, and then they have to pass that information. It is not because they don't know about it, just didn't have access to it at the same time. So they will eventually find out about it. One of the other things is that I always ask people such as yourself, Harish, is if you were starting today, for instance, your career or your journey, what would you do differently, if there is any?
Not much. I feel like I never planned my career. For me, it's usually like, this is the point where I am at what feels right to me. Am I going to enjoy this job? Am I going to enjoy working with these people? And am I going to grow? That's how I always looked at my career, and that's what, luckily, things worked out so far.
Absolutely. And is there anything out there that you're trying to get better at?
A lot. I don't think it's one thing, but I feel like if I had to think immediately, it would be like, one, being able to articulate my own thought process well to people around me. Because especially in AI, a lot of things even technically is changing very quickly. That means your communication frequency on, hey, I know I said we need to do XYZ, but now I'm saying that we might need to change, becomes important. We talked a lot about how much AI is changing every day. I want to make sure I spend at least an hour or two reading about something every day and trying out these tools at least once a week. Just be open-minded, curious, and keep learning about the new tools that's coming up. And just being able to read about how people think of this industry, this technology. Everyone is in the same. I feel it's one of those times where everyone is in the same level. Everyone is just trying to figure out what this technology means, how to use it effectively. And reading and exploring is the easiest way to learn for me.
And a couple more questions, and we'll let you go, Harish. We're not going to keep you too long. Where can people follow your thinking and connect with you? How can people connect with you?
LinkedIn. I know last month, so many things are happening with the changes to the companies. I haven't posted much, but usually I am.
You're
reasonably good
LinkedIn?
At posting. Yeah, I'm active on LinkedIn.
Well, absolutely. So for those who are not familiar with Harish, what I'll do is during the posting of this episode, I'll post his LinkedIn profile in the post that I make resulting this episode. If you need to connect to Harish and you can't find him, just reach out to me, send me a little note. I'll be happy to do an introduction for you. Also, one last question. Is there a question out there that you wish more people would ask you?
I do think in general, when I say something, I wish people ask why I am saying something to understand deeper, because I do that a lot. And I realize sometimes that annoys people. I do communicate a lot, and sometimes I feel like, yeah, people should ask why or what it is, right? It's just like being able to pick each other's brain or
Absolutely.
Challenge me. When I say why, it's more around like not, it's not about like, oh, I have answers to it. I like people challenging me so that I think more deeper about stuff.
You know, a lot of times we forget the why and we're more interested in the surface conversation. You know, that's why I started this podcast, is because I'm interested in finding out a little bit more about people. Obviously, you know, we only have 48 minutes. I could talk to you for 2 hours. We're trying to cover many topics, but you're right. You bring a very valid point. And challenging each other, not necessarily disrespectfully, nobody wants that, but respectfully challenging each other as to the why, it forces us to critical thinking. And that's something that's been missing, I guess, in many conversations. We tend to stay as a humanity lately, not everybody, of course, I'm generalizing, at the surface level. Going a little deeper would help us. Absolutely. So as we wrap up this conversation, Harish, is there anything else you'd like to add that I have missed covering?
On top of my mind, follow me on LinkedIn. If anything comes up, I would definitely be posting there.
Absolutely. And for the audience, I want to thank you for following us along here in this recording and for listening in on your podcast, favorite podcast stream. And also for joining us on YouTube, I really appreciate your time and appreciate your comments, your your encouragement, your feedback. It's all good and it keeps pushing me forward. One of those guys started 2.5 years ago, 2023 actually, not 2.5 years ago yet, and around end of the year almost, and in this podcast journey. I'm on episode 147, I guess, with this particular episode here. And it's all personal effort. There's no team behind me. I'm a soldier of one, an army of one in this journey. So I appreciate your support. I appreciate your encouragement. And I'm grateful for every one of you guys listening to this podcast. So thank you so much. And I will see you at the next episode. Harish, don't go.
Thank you.